Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I missed you so much.
Erin, I missed you so much. Wait, tell me, how is all your time off?
Oh, well, I haven't gotten anything done. I thought I would be able to like read books and do projects and stuff, but like babies have no schedule and you never get enough time to complete any tasks in between when the baby needs you. Like I had this idea that I would be able to just put her down for a nap and then go like sit down on a couch with a book and read. No.
Very Downton Abbey feeling.
No, yeah, no, there's no leisure time. It's like sitting down and being like, oh, okay, well, I don't have the baby right now. And then the baby starts crying again. But she's getting to be a cute little person. She's
an adorable little person.
She babbles a lot. She looks just like Josh, which I find to be very rude of biology.
But that's a thing, right?
Right.
Babies always look like their dads for paternity.
Yeah.
Or so they say.
Because cavemen would just like, if the baby didn't look enough like them, they'd be like, meh, not my responsibility, and like run off. But my husband isn't a caveman. Why can't my baby look a little like me? She looks just like him. She's very cute. She doesn't really do anything.
She's a button nose.
She does have a little button nose, which is pretty cute. But yeah, I've been, you know, really missing you, really missing the show. You know, I took like a month off. I didn't take in any news because I just was like too stressed out. And it was really nice at first. But then after a few weeks, my world started to feel a little bit too small.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of like ready to be back into the bullshit again.
Really? I feel like I could maybe have taken a little bit more of a break over the holidays, but like so much bad stuff was happening. You're like, well, how am I going to know how many Omicron infections there were today if I don't watch CNN?
Right. I think it's just like you got to do like a dry January, but with news that bums you out. Just like take a little bit of time. We've talked about this in the show before. Just take a little bit of time and be like, I'm taking X amount of time and I'm not taking in anything.
And a need-to-know basis kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Like, every single time I would turn on the news or, like, NPR or the BBC, I'm not talking, like, annoying punditry stuff. I'm talking about, like, legitimate news. Every time I would turn it on, I would be like, nope, tapping out. And, like...
Yep, not relevant right now.
Nope, can't. Not doing it. Anyway, let's get into news for today.
Wait, before we get into news, can I say something else?
Yeah.
Just so our listeners know, you and I have been joking about how maternity leave is not time off, so I don't want anyone thinking I was legitimately asking what you did on your winter vacation.
No, it's not time off because, Alyssa, you've been getting pictures of Juniper, basically a constant stream of them.
It's a joy.
Because you've asked for them. I'm not just like spamming.
I have asked. I'm like, please send all the pictures of the baby doing anything that's adorable, which is everything.
This week, we are joined by Dr. Heather Irrabunda, Megan Gailey, and Kara Klenk to tackle the following questions. 1 year later, have we learned anything from the January 6th insurrection? What does postpartum mean? And why does it suck so bad? And did any good movies come out in 2021? All this and more right now. Okay, let's get into the news. I have a question that I was thinking about last night. I had CNN on in the background, and they were talking about Sean Hannity exchanging text messages with the Trump White House in the run-up to the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, which is now exactly a year ago. And here's the question that I came up with, because it's all, you know, it's Jim Jordan it's Mark Meadows and it's Sean Hannity and Donald Trump and all of these people exchanging text messages like they're running some kind of heist. And my big takeaway question is, Alyssa, how do we fight the scourge of unattractive people with horrible personalities who turn to politics in order to satisfy their pathological need for attention? How do we fix it?
Shit, I don't even know. I mean, I guess it's only to stop giving them attention, right? Isn't that the only thing that's going to make them tap out and try to find something else? Or do they just mutate like the virus and become worse until they get more and more attention?
That's my question, because I feel like January 6th was like an outbreak of infection. If we're going to go around, we're going to, you know, take this metaphor. It felt like an outbreak. Like we had something that was kind of, you know, America had a sort of cold and it was like, no, I don't really need to deal with this. I don't need to deal with this. And then it got so bad that it actually had to go to the hospital, essentially.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I remember last January 6th, it was me and you were recording a show. And the news was happening on a Wednesday, as it tends to do. I remember getting out of recording with you. We had just interviewed Essie Cupp.
Yep.
About Hilaria Baldwin. And then we got out and the Capitol was in the process of being stormed. And we were like, oh, okay. What are we going to do about this? But, you know, between last year and this year, I've thought a lot about the people who are sort of the ringleaders of the January 6th sort of insurrection mindset and, you know, who they are and how much ink they get, how much airtime they get, and whether they deserve all the attention they're getting, if that just eggs them on. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do think it eggs them on. I also think it's interesting what we've seen in the past couple of weeks as the January 6th commission has unearthed more and more and more, is like also how many of them are actually just like playing a role, right? Like this is Sean Hannity being like, this is fucking out of control. And Laura Ingraham being like, yo, you're ruining everybody's legacy. Like, stop this. But then on that same day, getting on television and being like, these were just tourists. These were just tourists. And so it's interesting because they are actually, I mean, I don't know what I respect more, you know? I mean, like, if you actually are that dark-hearted and that evil, and you realize that by playing the role and instigating and being hateful, that you get better ratings and more clicks and, like, a primetime television show or whatever the fuck it is they get, that it's, I mean, your point is exactly correct. Like, the more awful they are, the more attention they get, but it just makes them mutate worse.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you brought up more views and more clicks. Like, I think cable news viewership in across all the channels, including Fox News, has dropped big time since Donald Trump hasn't been in office. So it's almost like not paying attention to these people is also bad for the news business.
Yes.
Because not featuring, like, the most wacky out there people makes politics get boring again, which is, I'm using like quotes around politics because, you know, things that affect the lives of Americans and the continuance of our democracy shouldn't be boring, but it's not like professional wrestling.
Totally.
I feel like the Sean Hannitys and the Donald Trumps of the world kind of think of politics as a spectacle.
Right.
And people like Sean Hannity, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking about professional wrestling, but
I mean, I can go, you know, deep in professional wrestling for what it's worth.
So can I.
Okay.
I used to watch it with my dad in the 80s. We would watch like WCW.
So these guys are all literally cosplaying like Randy Macho Man Savage, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Rowdy Roddy Piper. They're like, who are we going to tag in? Brett the Anvil Neidhart. They're like, who?
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Yes.
Jake the
Jim
Snake
the Anvil
Roberts.
Neidhart. Yes.
The Million Dollar Man.
It's like every one of these guys is like they're in the game and they're like, shit, this isn't working. Let's jump over the rope and get a chair. And you know what I mean? Like they're doing all of this. My God, wasn't Donald Trump in one of those?
He was.
Fucking A. It's not even an analogy anymore. It's true.
I know. And there's so much cross-pollination. It's like the Donald Trumps and the Sean Hannity, the Fox Newses of the world. Yeah. Are in the wrestling ring and they're pantomiming these big things. But what essentially happened on January 6th is the crowd decided to pick up folding chairs and start beating the shit out of other people for real, you know? And I think that there are some people that weren't comfortable with that becoming real. And then there were some people that were comfortable with it becoming real, like the former president seems like he was comfortable with it. So, I mean, do you think we've learned anything as a country since January 6th? Do you think that there will ever be like a satisfactory outcome to what happened on January 6th?
You know, I've thought a lot about this. To me, the only satisfactory thing that can come from the January 6th commission is that Donald Trump can't run for president again. I mean, this seems to me like I don't care if he goes to jail. I mean, he's not going to go to jail. But the interesting thing I keep thinking is that, like, Liz Cheney clearly has a play. Like, there's something she keeps talking about, dereliction of duty, the dereliction mm-hmm. of duty, how he watched the stuff happen, and how, as commander in chief, the question to answer is, did he stop the certification of the election, which would be a crime, I guess, or something. Mm-hmm. But if,
or did he try to?
Did he try to? And so it's, to me, it's like, if the outcome of this is a finding that precludes him from ever running for president again, I think that that is something. Because I think the problem right now is Republicans are like, look, there's nothing to see here. Some of these lunatics went to jail. Like, it's something that got out of hand. And it's like, no, you're mm-hmm. there's like such a trail of complicity. The Rolling Stone interview with Peter Navarro is one of the most chilling things I have read, where he's all like you find out by reading this, the plans that they had are insane. And what stopped their attempted coup was actually that these crazy people got violent, and the Republicans, who apparently were already on board with this, were like, whoa, 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 this went too far. And mm-hmm. so they had had a plan that had reached out to 100 members of Congress who were, according to him, on board with how they would stop the certification. And it started, like, their plan was unfolding, you know. Cruz was supposed to object with that Gohmert, Gospar's person mm-hmm. To Arizona, and he did. And that was supposed to be the beginning, and they were going to get enough states to object. And then, as everybody knows, because this was actually a Veep storyline, every state in this case, if neither person had 270 electoral votes, it comes down to one vote per state, which would have made Donald Trump president. This was their whole plan. And like I said, it was like season 5 or 6 of Veep. And mm-hmm. the thing that stopped it were that the crazy people got too crazy. So I think that there's a real fundamental scary problem that we haven't really stopped the problem. And I think that the only thing that would scare people enough maybe to think this was all a very bad idea is if Donald Trump is sidelined for the rest of his life. But we don't know if that'll happen.
Yeah. Something that I've been thinking about with the January 6th commission, just in the context of what Washington has accomplished overall with Democrats holding the presidency, the House, and the Senate. I feel like a lot, the average American doesn't really understand how, like, the day-to-day work of a member of Congress looks.
Right.
And you know, and a person can be on a commission and also be working on legislation and stuff. But I think that there are people who see what is happening in D.C. And there's all this focus in the Beltway media and among members of Congress. There's all of this talk of January 6th. And in the meantime, Build Back Better has sort of been sidelined. And a lot of the things that would help ordinary Americans on the ground aren't really moving forward.
Right.
So I feel like what a lot of voters, and this is just, I maybe shouldn't be putting this out into the universe, but I feel like what a lot of voters are seeing is elected officials who are, like, repeatedly pursuing this thing that was a slight directly to them. Mm-hmm. So, like, voters see January 6th as something, the people that were targeted were elected officials,
right.
You know? And so they see elected officials focusing way more. And this is, again, I'm playing devil's advocate, not like a white guy in a philosophy
right.
class, but I'm just kind of like reasoning through this. Like, you know, what they're seeing is a Congress that is spending a lot of time and giving a lot of airtime to January 6th. And in the meantime, they're not able to get this Build Back Better agenda pushed through. And that worries me. And I hate being one of those people that's like, that worries me for 2022 or whatever, but it does kind of. I don't know if what I'm saying makes any sense to you.
No, it makes total sense to me, except I think that there's an interesting look. I think that the media has been so jazzed for something new and exciting to talk about, right? And I think that the one thing that's a little interesting about the January 6th committee is some of the things that they have uncovered are in fact surprising. You know, Don Jr. texting Mark Meadows to be like, get my dad to stop this shit is surprising information. Like, when I read it, I was like, that can't be true. And I think that the problem with the Build Back Better narrative, or lack of narrative, is that for the summer, it was like, yeah, it's going to be big. It's going to be huge. Look at all the shit that's going to be in it. I feel like we didn't really, that the Democrats didn't really sort of level set expectations for what's possible. And so now the back and forth, especially right before the holidays, was so fucking tedious that I think nobody could listen to it. It was Mansion Watch, you know, every day. Mm-hmm. And that is as boring. But I think that one of the things, if I were a Democrat, I mean, I am a Democrat, but if I were – actually, Erin, I have an announcement.
Oh, wow. If you heard it here first.
If I were an elected official, I would be on – in Congress, if I were a congressional person, I would be on my local fucking TV every day if I were a Democrat being like, look at this road that's being built, okay? That was from the infrastructure bill. Look at this. Look at this. Look at these problems. Here's what's going on in the lives of people right now. Guess what? If Build Back Better, like, I would want to be on television. I don't need elected officials like fucking Twitter fighting. They should be communicating because I think that, like, we're going to have a real problem if come the midterms we haven't touted the successes. And I know that there are losses and that there are things that we wanted that we haven't seen yet. But I think that people need to know how Build Back Better would affect their everyday lives. And I feel like the media is just focused on, like, Joe Manchin and Kristen, whatever her name is, Sinema, and being like, here's the drama. And nobody has the bandwidth for the drama anymore. You know, it's like, enough. Guess what? I don't give a shit. She's like, what are they doing? No one is focusing on me. I have problems and no one is focusing on me. And the Republicans are still working this, like, you're aggrieved because nobody's helping you, but we're going to help you, which is a lie, but I still think resonates with some people.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think that Beltway media is really obsessed with drama and castle intrigue as it applies to the things that surround them.
Right.
But there's sort of like, I don't know, it's like up their own asses. And I think that the death of local media has really contributed to a loss of local interest being represented anywhere. I think that, I don't know, I'm worried about this year. I'm worried every year.
Totally.
But I'm especially worried about this year. I feel like the way that Congress deals with or tries to get work done is not effective. And I feel like the average American doesn't really see how all of this is helping them.
Right.
Do you know what
I mean?
Like, I guess on a kind of theoretical level, like, punishing people who storm the U.S. Capitol is good for America and good for all Americans. But it's not the same as having the child tax credit deposit in your bank account every month.
It's not even remotely close.
Exactly. In terms of the daily lives of Americans.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm worried about this year. We're going to be talking more about this, I think, as the year unfolds and as we march toward whatever we're marching toward. I want to say really quick, speaking of people who don't need any more attention, Marjorie Taylor Greene got suspended from Twitter.
Yeah.
I saw some analysis from Chris Saliza, the CNN person who's usually wrong about everything. This was good. This was the blind squirrel finding a nut. he wrote something called "What Does Marjorie Taylor Greene Do All Day?" And I think that is the most important question here. She's not on any committees. She can't tweet all day anymore. Like, what does she do?
What does she do other than just rack up fines for not wearing masks in the Capitol?
Yeah, and she seems like a real waste of a congressional seat. And I hope that the people of Georgia can get that shit straightened out, because how embarrassing for them.
Super embarrassing.
Yeah. Okay. Also, big week for white women getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Holmes was found guilty on Monday because of the fuckery that was afoot with her former company, Theranos. She was found guilty on 4 charges of defrauding investors. She faces up to 20 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 plus restitution for each count. What do you make of this, Alyssa?
I mean, good. The fuck? What a lunatic. I mean, look, there's a lot of jiggery pokery that goes on in Silicon Valley, but like...
Oh. Is that the only Scalia quote that you're ever going to use?
Is it
the only Antonin?
Wait, does he say
Antonin
jiggery
Scalia
pokery?
Scalia wrote jiggery pokery, I think, into a Supreme Court opinion.
Okay, I didn't know that. I got it from Shane Smith, who used to talk about creating jiggery pokery.
Okay. Nice.
But I mean, there are ways to defraud people, and there are bad things you can do. But creating a company where you know you're lying to people about medical results is about one of the sickest, most depraved things I think a person can do.
Yeah, it's pretty sick and depraved.
A woman was told she was HIV positive when she wasn't. Like, I mean, this is crazy shit. This woman should be, I mean, she is the ultimate, and this is a euphemism when it comes to her. She's the ultimate Janet from another fucking planet. Like, she is such a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, she is totally Janet from another planet. But I will say this about the bad medical test results. Like, if you got test results that said you had AIDS or HIV and then found out that you didn't, that day that you find out you didn't is
a
the
great
best
day
ever.
You know what's
a great day.
You know what's bad? So what if, when you get your test results and they tell you you're fine and then you find out you got some levels that mean you might have cancer.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Right?
But, you know, if Holmes's tests were only giving people incorrect news that was bad, I would say her defense could have argued that in a way she was creating the best days of people's lives over and over again. You know, this the Elizabeth Holmes thing and her complete cluelessness about how unacceptable her behavior was makes me think that maybe all of Silicon Valley is sort of steeped in bullshit. And there are a lot of companies out there that have a lot of money behind them that are saying they can do something, but actually can't do the thing that they say they can do. Like, I think that Holmes believes that she was acting in a way that is part of the culture.
I agree with that.
Where she was operating. And I'm not excusing her at all. What I'm doing is like condemning the rest of the like disrupting tech bros, both men and women of Silicon Valley.
Like, for example, I'm very glad to see, I think that Elizabeth Holmes deserved, you know, to be punished for what she did. At the same time, I think literally within hours of the verdict, a story popped about Adam Neumann from WeWork, who is a known fucking lunatic, being like, you know what? I'm starting an apartment empire. Like, he's starting some business with apartments. And I'm like, wait, hold on a second. Why has no one gone down the rabbit hole on him? Like, there has to be some.
There's like WeWork documentaries,
right?
Like, about how nuts he is, but he's still out there,
just starting a new thing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It seems bad. A lot of stuff seems bad. Also, Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty on 5 counts last week: 1 count of sex trafficking a minor, 1 count of sex trafficking conspiracy, and 3 counts of conspiring to transport minors with the intention of illegal sexual activity. She was the real Pizzagate, apparently.
I like to call her Jizz because I don't feel I should have to learn how to say her name when she was a sex trafficker. But the best part of what's come out in the past couple of weeks was that her husband broke up with her over the phone.
She got dumped when she was in jail. Is there any, look, if anybody deserves to get dumped in jail,
It's her.
Like, Elizabeth Holmes does not deserve to get dumped in jail.
No.
But Maxwell, absolutely. Totes.
And here's my other question about her. Like, I didn't even know she was married. I thought that she legit had like a weird arrangement with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, I really didn't delve too far into her life.
No, so that was an interesting development in many ways.
Yes, that is an interesting fact. Another lesson from the Maxwell case, because I don't want to learn. I think Ghislaine, that's correct?
Ghislaine, I think that's right.
Yeah, blech, spell it right, Ghislaine. Here's another thing. Ladies, if you're with a bad guy or if you're allied with a bad guy, that guy is not going to go to the mat for you.
No.
That guy is not. This is a great example of why you should not stand by your man if your man is a real piece of shit, because pieces of shit will treat you like pieces of shit treat people. You will be on the hook when they try to get out of trouble.
He went to prison. He took the pin out of the grenade, offed himself, threw the grenade at her, and was like, Godspeed.
Bye. Yeah.
See ya.
I mean, look, who could have expected a really terrible person would do that to their closest ally? No, bad people will not reward you. It's the Donald Trump paradigm.
Yes.
Like, if you align yourself with a person who is bad, they will not protect you when shit goes down. They just won't.
No. There's no code.
No, there is no code. And then real quick before we take a break. I have a toast to the country of France.
Oh, yes.
France is offering free birth control for all women under 25, which is great.
Amazing.
Yeah, which I think is really great. It's to expand the plan that existed before, which targeted under 18s. So it used to be that if you're under 18, you could get free birth control. Now it's if you're under 25, because they didn't want people to stop taking birth control because they couldn't afford it. So I find that to be a great move, and birth control should be free.
I think it is a great move. And I actually had one quick off-the-cuff toast. Are you ready?
Yes.
Governor Kathy Hochul of the great state of New York, in her State of the State address, will be introducing a measure for term limits for the governor and about three or four other positions. So let me just say that after people have run for governor, after these many years of Cuomo, you have to love that it's the first woman to ever be governor who's like, yo, I am shutting this shit down. And so anyway, I appreciate that. And good work there, Gov.
She is an upside surprise.
She's an upside. You know what she is? I think she's just AB, all business. Like, yeah. She's got her fucking cup of coffee, going into the office, just gets shit done, goes home. And I'm like, I'm for it.
Mm-hmm. And also Mary Steenburgen could play her in a biopic.
Without question. That is a great casting call.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have personal political about the postpartum period. Alyssa, you're going to sit this one out, right?
I am. As a 46-year-old with no kids, I feel like it's time for me to make room for other people.
But you're going to be back for I Feel Petty.
Obviously, because I'm petty as fuck now that you're back.
Yay. Okay, we'll be right back.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that proves that the feminists are reproducing, this week at least. I want to bring in my panelists. First off, we have Megan Gailey. You can listen to her Colts podcast, Go Horse, and Megan Fun of Sports. Megan, did your dad write those titles? Because those are extreme dad joke titles.
No, he didn't, but he's proud of me.
Yes.
He's definitely proud.
That's great. Up next, she's a returning Hysteria champ. She's a comic and host of her own podcast, That's Messed Up, an SVU pod. It's Kara Klenk. Kara, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me back. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Mm-hmm. And finally, she is a Brooklyn-based OB, a reproductive and sex health advocate, an Army vet, and now has her own podcast called Advisory Cervix. I feel like I need to pause. These podcast names got – Kara is the only one that has, like, an adult name. And then we've got, like, Advisory Cervix, Go
Horse. We don't
horse.
Have a punny name.
Yeah, yeah. But you can listen to Advisory Cervix wherever you listen to podcasts. And we are excited to welcome back to the show Dr. Heather Irabunda. Dr. Heather, welcome.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, this is my first show back since
Yay, welcome back.
I know. I've got a baby. She's like a couple rooms over sleeping, I think. I don't know.
A celeb.
She's a celebrity baby. But, you know, before I had her, we didn't really have anybody on the show who had kids. And so I didn't really feel super comfortable leading discussions about the experience of pregnancy, having children, and all of those issues. I'm comfortable interviewing people, but not really talking about them firsthand. But now, you know, I have a kid. Megan Gailey is expecting one to roll in a few months. Kara's got two kids, and we've got a doctor who specializes in helping women and pregnant people have kids. So, like, let's have this conversation that we've been waiting to have for several years. I want to apologize in advance to my father-in-law who listens to this podcast, because I will be talking about my taint a little bit today.
There you go.
No conversation about pregnancy and postpartum care is complete without discussing the taint.
It's necessary.
It's necessary. So, Dr. Heather, I want to start with you, since you're our expert here. Can you talk a little bit about what the postpartum period is and how valuable the information is that's already out there that people are getting about it? Like, are people fully informed about it? What do people know? What don't people know? Just give us the quick elevator pitch of postpartum.
So classically, it's thought about like the first 42 days after giving birth, but really that's like kind of interesting because I think it came from, and it's not that I think, it's actually in data that it came from trying to figure out when women could go back to doing farm work and heavy lifting after they've delivered a baby out of their vaginas or whatever, right? And so we really think that it's more like a year after at the very least, and really the rest of your life is kind of a big postpartum period, to be honest, because, you know, as long as you have gone through that situation, you know, you've had a baby, you will constantly be reminded of that situation through various parts of your life going forward. But really the first year or so is when you're dealing with all the changes that your body went through recently as it carried another human and then expelled it and then is recovering from that.
Okay. And Kara, you have two kids.
Yeah, I do.
What did you expect or know about the postpartum period before you had kids? And what was something that you discovered after?
Well, I had friends that had had obviously postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, which I discovered were two different things from a friend that had had postpartum anxiety. And so I was prepared for, you know, anything to happen with a big hormone drop. I feel fortunate that I did not have like a very mentally difficult postpartum period, but I definitely, yeah, I couldn't expect what was happening to my body at all. I mean, I had to get Botox in my butt, you guys.
Wait, explain. This is a new thing for me. Why did you have to get
Heather's
Botox?
Like,
in your butt?
I know.
Yeah, girl.
Let's
talk about it.
You open the taint floodgates, Erin. So
gross.
You know, there's some horrible things that happen, tearing, and then constipation where it's hard to have bowel movements. And sometimes if you're not healing on your own, you need to freeze those parts so that they can stop being hurt and so that you can heal, and nothing freezes things better than Botox.
Yeah. Botox works. Say what you will about it, but it totally works in your face.
So yeah, my butt looks like fucking 10 years younger.
There you go.
She's a college grad.
Megan, what have you been like preparing yourself for when it comes to like the time immediately after having a baby? And what are some things that you, what are some things that you hear about that you're not quite comfortable with?
This is the first time I've been a panelist where I'm like, I think you guys just want to scare me. Megan seems like she's too easy breezy posting these bump pics, and we need to really bring her back down to earth. I was a nanny, and I started with a newborn when he was 11 weeks old. And so I do feel like, I'm like, listen, I know babies and stuff, but the period from like water breaking to 11 weeks is what I'm the most terrified of, because it seems so uncertain. And even the idea of having a birth plan is like, sure, okay, I'll have a plan, but it's gonna go out the window.
Right.
So I'm definitely worried about the labor itself, and then being like, what is my husband going to be doing? What's going to be the COVID of it all? Well, my mom was a labor and delivery nurse and taught Lamaze for decades, so I want her in the room. But if Omicron is still raging, is she not going to be able to be in there? So it's kind of like a constant evolution. I was told last week with my OBGYN's voice sounding alarmed that I have a large baby. So it's like, okay, I need to probably start mentally preparing that maybe I'm going to have a C-section. And what would those 2 weeks of healing look like in my house if I'm not able to do a lot? And I jokingly say, like, I'm someone who does take my body and appearance, like, it matters to me that I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have everything put back to where it was. But it's like, that may cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that may just not be in the cards. And am I going to have to just come to terms with, like, yeah, having a loose butthole? Because it's like, can I only – if it's Botox in my butthole or my face, I'm going face, you know? Like, that's what people see.
You don't have to choose.
Okay.
Is it a 2-2?
It's a 2-for-1.
You use the same vial. You use the same vial and use some for your face and some for your butthole.
See, that is eco-conscious Botox use right there. Save a canister. Use it on the face and butthole.
Don't waste a drop.
Well, Megan, I remember kind of having a similar like tornado of uncertainty when it came to pregnancy and the birth, and I tried to cope with it by learning as much as I could about every possible scenario, which ended up, I think, being a way for me to occupy my time, but I don't know if it really helped me reduce my anxiety like once things were in motion. But you brought up something that's really interesting, and I want to pivot to Dr. Irabunda real quick. You mentioned that like people scare expectant parents, or people use anecdotes of what they'd been through to like try to scare people who aren't parents at all. And Dr. Heather, I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Like, do you think that a person who hasn't had kids should be scared because of other people's postpartum stories?
I don't think they should be scared, because I feel like it's just like Yelp reviews or like Google, right? People are only going to talk about really good stuff or really bad stuff. They're not going to talk about the just okay stuff. Like, you know what? Like, I didn't get my butt ripped from, you know, I wasn't ripped, my whole tank didn't rip. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people are not talking about that, right? So they're always talking about like, listen, I had to get Botox, things were bad, or this is what happened to me, or this is what happened to my friend. I was even guilty of it as being an OBGYN. So like, most of my friends were having their first child when I was in residency, beginning of my career. And, you know, as like grumpy, like resident type, I would like go to brunch with them and then be like, oh, you're pregnant? Let me tell you about all the like random crazy things that I saw, you know, in the last month since I've seen you on labor and delivery. And then it wasn't until one of them was like, you know, this actually truly scares me into like wanting to do this for myself, that I had to think about like the fact that I'm only telling the stories that are the most vivid, the most memorable, the craziest, you know, to me, maybe the funniest or, you know, weirdest, but like, it's not necessarily helpful to someone going through that experience. And really and truly, as someone who's seen a lot of babies being born in a variety of different ways, most times it ends up okay. And everybody is not like emotionally and physically scarred from what has happened to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kara, I want to pivot to you. Megan also brought up like changes that happened to like the body and needing to surgically put them back in place. And I don't want to put you totally on the spot because I'll talk about my body too if you're more comfortable with me doing that. But, you know, did it take a while for you to feel like your body was yours again? And do you feel like your body is yours now, or is it?
Yeah, I was gonna say any day now. like I mean, I definitely think that when people ask me what was like the one thing you were surprised about with pregnancy or motherhood, I always just say breastfeeding. Like it was so much more intensive than I thought it was gonna be. Like you're just. Like, and this is not to scare anyone. You're just, if you choose to do breastfeeding, you are like tethered to your baby for a little while. It is, it's just like, that's the facts of it. There's ways around it, pumping, and luckily modern, you know, conveniences have helped us with that. But I think especially when breastfeeding, you don't feel like your body's your own. And then I just ended that a month ago. And I'm kind of like, okay. And I'm just coming out of like also the brain fog of like, my son still doesn't sleep through the night completely. So like the tiredness and just word recall. I mean, you can even hear me on this podcast sometimes looking for words like that are pretty – I usually know them. And so I would say, yeah, it takes a little while to really feel like it. And now I'm just sort of starting to feel like, okay, now I mean, with the COVID of it all, it's different. But I've been like, okay, now I want to get back into working out. And like for some reason, I felt weird about working out breastfeeding. I always felt like I was going to like leak and, you know,
yes.
Like my boobs are enormous. They're going to like smack me in the face. You know, like I just was like, I was always like, as soon as I'm done breastfeeding, I will, you know, start the workout regimen again. And so I'm basically entering that now. So I'll keep you posted, but
well, and you have a two and a half year old or yeah. almost 3 year old and a 6 month. I mean, like you've been in baby rearing land for a while. Yeah. I mean, Kara and I are good friends. So it's like, I feel like you've been pregnant or having a newborn for 3 years now.
Yes. And yeah, it's been a long time. probably 4 years. Cause like, I mean, yeah. I started trying to get pregnant in like 2018.
Yeah.
So, like something 17. So like, yeah, it's been a long time. And yeah, I'm sort of starting now just finally. And I know for some women, it's like they don't feel that for years after their kids are seven mm-hmm. or 10 or 18. I don't mm-hmm. know. Like it mm-hmm. does feel like it takes, it's your own journey. But for me, I feel like I am getting there slowly. But truly, like, it's weird. There's parts of my body that I'm like, why does this shirt not close? Like, I know my boobs are big, but, like, it feels like my back widened. Like, how did my back widen getting pregnant? Like, I did, you know what I mean? Like, there's just weird things. And yeah. Day by day.
Here's the thing that one of the things I thought about, and I guess maybe I have a kind of morbid sensibility, but, like, you know, if like my body were to be like chucked into a bog and nobody found me for like 10 years and they dug my body up, they would be able to tell that I'd had a kid.
Yeah.
From my dead body that was like partially decomposed, they'd be able to tell from my skeletal remains that I had had a child. And so like that, I was so nervous when I was pregnant about, first of all, prefacing this by saying this is some like society patriarchy bullshit, but I was really preoccupied with like bouncing back. Mm-hmm. And I knew intuitively that is fucked up. That is fucked up that we put women under any pressure whatsoever to bounce back after they ring a bell that cannot be unrung. It's like another impossible standard. But I was worried about, you know, like I've run marathons and I like to hike and climb and I like to, you know, be physical. And
You do a lot.
Not anymore. I was worried that I would like lose my ability to do those things and that I would like not look the way that I wanted to look, like how you mentioned, Megan. And I feel like we had a lot of, you know, growing up, there was a lot of narratives around maybe our mothers or female relatives who, you know, were negative self-talking about their bodies after having kids or like trying to work out, going on like crash diets, which were really on fad in the 80s and 90s. And I will say that, you know, everybody is different and everybody's journey is different. But like Dr. Irabunda mentioned, all of the things that I was scared of were like the worst versions of things, if that makes any sense. Like, I was afraid that I would, you know, none of my clothes would fit. Or I was afraid that I would have to, like, keep my clothes in a plastic bin and, like, have them be my skinny clothes and feel, like, bad about myself for, you know, for not being able to fit into them, like, which is bullshit. But, you know, the reality is, like, after you have a baby, if you're breastfeeding, a lot of times your body is just like, all right, now let's just, like, shrink back down. And I just have this, like, extra skin now. But, you know, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. And I think as long as every time I get the narrative that's like, oh, you need to bounce back, get back to working out. It's like, shut up. That's not mm-hmm. what we're supposed to do. Dr. Irabunda, do you get patients that come in, like, preoccupied with getting their bodies back after they have kids? And what do you tell them?
Every single day. Every day that I see patients in my office, you know, it's really sad to me because we see how much our society puts pressure on women to be a certain way and how people feel so inappropriate about just being normal. Dude, you grew a whole human, another person, like another one of you in that body of yours. That's crazy. Like, if you think about it in, like, a very just, like, you know, like, basic way, it's, like, kind of crazy. And then when you think about the fact that, like, men can't do that, or people who don't have uteruses can't do that, right? That makes us pretty special. And so our bodies are going to change with that. And you need to give yourself grace because, like, you were maintaining your own body and then creating another one. Like, to me, it's always fascinating because I get to watch people do this all the time and I get to see, like, the evolution, the growth of it. And really and truly, it's like, yeah, your body is never going to be the same, but, you know, those are little reminders of the person that you grew, right? And, you know, there's ways for you to feel comfortable in that. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you need to look like the Beyonce, because Beyonce is, like, the person who a lot of patients I've had talk to me about, like, because, you know, she had the twins and then she did Coachella. I mean, I'm, like, also a Beyonce stan, so I'm obsessed, but, like, she did Coachella, like, a few weeks after, and then she was, like, the thinnest and, like, most ripped she's ever been. And I'm like, that's also her job. Like, you know what I mean? Like, her job is to train and to work and to look a certain way. And, like, she also has a lot of help. Like, you know, people don't necessarily talk about that part, but when, you know, you're going back to work because, you know, whatever we can talk about, like, paid parental leave, but, you know, you're going back to work really soon after you had your child and you're feeding this child and you're bathing this child and you're taking care of this child. Like, the fact that you're still, like, able to wake up in the morning or whatever time of the day is and be, like, a normal human-ish, I think is awesome, right? And we need to think about those things a lot more. And it's hard because, you know, you see the physical changes and you feel, like, awkward about it, but, like, you grew a whole human and you should be proud of that.
Yeah, I do have to say, I have been just amazed at the size of bras that are available. Like, because truly, like, the, you know, in the process of, I'm breastfeeding my daughter because it happened to work out for us, and I would not feel bad about myself if it hadn't worked out for us, because, God, breastfeeding pressure is this whole other thing. But with breastfeeding, your boobs get enormous, and, like, I am, you know, getting into parts of the alphabet I never thought I would get to before. It's truly a miracle what the human boob can do.
It is. It's truly a miracle. So think about this, right? I haven't had kids yet, and I have an H cup. So only imagine how much bigger these babies are going to be. It's going to be a disaster.
I know women that are like, I don't want to really have kids because I'm worried at how big my boobs will get. Like, then my friends that have already are like G's, H, like, big, you know?
Like, what do you do? Like, where do you get bras? Because I'm, like, the last bra, like, not even normal stuff, right? Like, I have to get special bras, and I'm like, the upper end of that. So, like, what am I going to do?
You have to get to, like, some dark corners of Amazon. They have, like, you can, like, type in sizes and it'll, like, come up. And, like, they'll have, like, a model wearing the bra. And it'll be, like, it looks like an industrial, like, engineering feat. But the women wearing the bras look happy, but that's their job. They're models.
I mean, I've experienced comments about even how my pregnant body looks and people being like, you're carrying, like, your bump is so cute. You can't tell you're pregnant from the back. And yeah. I'm having a boy. And so people, I guess there's an old wives' tale of like, boys keep you pretty and girls make you ugly. And like, oh, you haven't gained any weight in your arm. Like, people say that type of stuff. And it's like, I don't really have any control over this. And I have a mom who is very petite and did bounce back and worked at it too. But like, I have people be like, oh, you'll be fine because your mom is tiny. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's a crazy pressure to put on me that like, if I'm not the size of my mom after having this child, then like, I failed my own genetics somehow mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, that's fucked up. Also, like, I'm really glad because my mother has never been, like, a weight mom. But I think there are a lot of people that have mothers that are like, I lost the weight. I'm skinny. And, like, put that pressure on their daughters, which really is, like, fucked up. But it's interesting to me that, like, so much of what we think about postpartum, like, the postpartum experience centers around weight and our appearance when mm-hmm. so much of what actually happened I wasn't prepared for, even though people had sort of like implied it for me, because it's things that happen like out of sight. You know, people, you can't see, you know, whatever degree tear a person has and what it feels like to have stitches like in your body. It's not like the very worst pain in the world, but it's like pretty solidly uncomfortable until the
and
stitches.
Itchy.
Yeah.
And itchy.
It's, yeah. Mm. It's uncomfortable for like the weeks that it takes for the stitches to come out on their own. And like, you know, there are other aspects of it that are just not visible and so we're never talked about. Like postpartum depression is not like, it's like extra spicy depression. Mm. It's like, you know, if you're a person that has moments of depression before you're pregnant, it's sort of like that, but like there's no event that triggers it. Like regular depression, there'll be something that happens and then, you know, it'll, for me at least, something will happen and then I'll get depressed as the, you know, it'll start me down a depressive like little phase. But with postpartum stuff, it was just like, I would just be going about my day and suddenly it was like, it would walk up and just slap me in the face. No, nothing prompting it whatsoever, 100% hormones, which are another thing that's like totally invisible. So when I was postpartum, luckily, my OBGYN is really progressive, but she wrote me a Zoloft prescription like preemptively, was like, you're going to need this. Start taking it when you have your kid, like, because I had depressive symptoms when I was pregnant. It's like, I was not prepared for how just like out of nowhere it was. And then also like the anxiety. Kara, did you ever get like intrusive thoughts? Like you're holding your baby and you're like, what if the ceiling falls down and crushes me and the baby? Like totally irrational stuff yeah. like that?
Yeah. And I would definitely like just be lying there and be like, I don't hear anything. And then think like, oh my God, she stopped breathing or, you know, like something like, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, you just start thinking like that. Like I had a friend who, and I love her to death, but like when I first had my baby, she goes, doesn't it just crush you the idea of ever leaving them or something like that? That something could happen to you and you would leave them alone. And I was like, why would you say that to me? Like now that's all I'm thinking about. Like, cause like before that, it's like, you know, I guess your family would miss you, but whatever. Now you're like, oh my God, this person depends on me. Like, why are you bringing up that I might not be with them? Like, but you know, I don't say that to give everybody the same feeling. Just
yeah, thank you.
Get those thoughts out of your head.
I think the three of us are very lucky too, to live in California and have OBs and Dr. Heather to practice in New York, where it's like, my friends back in Indiana, they've been like, you need to make sure, da, 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 da. And I'm like, I just don't think that's going to be an issue with my doc. I think my doctor is going to be on top of it. Mm-hmm. I have a young female doctor who chose to practice in Pasadena, California. I think she's going to be on it. I don't think I'm going to have to be like, hello, I'm sad for like my mom's OB to listen to me.
Yeah. Right. They also have you fill out a questionnaire at your pediatrician every visit until 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty they're pretty intense about it out here. But Megan, I think that you brought up something really interesting, which is like the huge disparity in the quality of OBGYN care, even within this country. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Heather, I would love to, I don't want to hear a horror story, but, you know, on one hand, we have people like you who are really going out there and trying to educate people and be like open-minded and progressive and helpful in a way that feels very modern. But, you know, elsewhere, people aren't getting the same kind of care. Like, have you encountered other OBGYNs or other ways of thinking in the specialty that have kind of made you worried about the quality of care their patients are getting?
Oh, yes, in a multitude of ways. And I actually want to, you know, talk about like the mental health tip specifically, because many of us who trained, I don't know, within the last like 15 years have been taught, you know what, we treat postpartum depression, we treat depression in pregnancy, we treat anxiety. Like, there are medications that have been studied in pregnant, you know, people, and they're safe and effective for use. And we actually have data and studies to show the negative effects of untreated depression in pregnant and postpartum people to not only themselves, but to their offspring, right? Like, we know that it increases the chances of, you know, like a whole bunch of different things, right? And this to me was something that was, I was trained on. I was taught this. This was like not a non-negotiable. And then like I would go out and practice and be in these like department meetings where, you know, there are people from different practices, you know, some of them are like old guys, whatever. And like you would meet them and talk to them or talk to some of the patients that they've seen, and they would be taken off of all of their antidepressant medications, like when they started seeing this doc, because they're like, you know, it's so bad for you to be on any like psychoactive meds. It could like have all these like deleterious effects on your like baby and all this stuff. And like, who cares if you don't want to get out of bed? It's not about you. It's about this baby that you're like growing. And it's like, we know that that's like not a good thing, even for the baby that you're growing. But like, honestly, if the mom or pregnant person, the vessel is not good, that's not good for anyone involved, right? And it's like, I've had to so many times, like, then go back and like, cause you're the young OB, like talk to your patient who was told by like somebody that looks like their dad that was like, this is going to like ruin your baby. This is going to ruin your pregnancy and whatnot, and have to like do the work to like reverse that, you know? So I've seen a lot around like psych stuff, like where it's like there are like Zoloft, for example, is like very well studied both in pregnancy and postpartum. And we know that it's very effective and it works. And I have gotten into it with like, you know, other OBs, psychiatrists, even sometimes, like, it's fine for her to be on Zoloft. Like, it's fine. Like, I want her to be on Zoloft. I am writing it in the chart so you can make sure to put this patient on Zoloft because, you know, like, it'd be better. But, like, there's that. And then also, too, I don't know if you guys have heard about, like, the husband stitch.
Oh, yes. That makes me
furious.
Right. Yeah, so gross.
So I trained in the military, but I was still in like the DC metro area. So like, even though like everyone I was dealing with were either actually active duty in the military, there were also people who were dependents and people worked for the government, like congresspeople, whatever, right? And so it was very progressive. I hadn't really heard many people talk about that stuff when I was in training, but oh boy, when I left and went to rural upstate New York and like, I'd hear like, you know, some of the guys, like, you know, other OBGYNs, because for a little part there, I was the only female OBGYN in that area. So I'd go to these meetings and you'd like talk about this stuff and thought it was so funny. And I'm like, this is horrifying. Like,
can you explain what the husband stitch is to our listeners?
Yes.
Like, you guys, once you hear what this is, if you don't know, you can't go back and unknow it because it's, it's horrible.
So basically, it's like, so if you had a tear during your labor and we're repairing it, right? We usually just repair it to make it so that it doesn't bleed and it goes back to what it looked like before, right? And that just means everything's back together, right? But the husband stitch is an extra stitch to make it tighter for your husband's pleasure. And it is the most horrific thing. I once was in a delivery and the father of the woman who was giving birth was there, but like behind a curtain, right? And so we deliver the baby. Everybody's like doting over the baby. I'm doing the repair. And her dad yells, "Are you going to put a little extra stitch in there for her husband?" Oh. And I was like, I like became completely unhinged. I was like, I like tried to keep it together for like 2 seconds, but I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me right now?
Oh my God. Ew. Oh my God. I would have stitched his mouth closed. That's horrifying. Yeah. I mean, like the physical toll that pregnancy, that childbirth takes on your body. Like, it's a sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation. The baby's coming out one way or another. C-section, you have, like, you can't really lift anything and you just had a major abdominal surgery. Vaginal birth, everything down there is sort of a mess until it sort of sorts itself out. I have to say that before I gave birth, I wasn't I don't want to scare you, Megan, because this it's not scary. Okay. I'm on the other side of it now. I'm doing great.
And you seem happy.
Zoloft is great. I barely cry anymore.
Listen, I'm riding Lexapro in and out, you know? Ooh, like, I'm on it now. She said, keep it going, girl. I said, I'll go off. Yeah. She said, let's not.
Exactly. That's nice. Me. I'm literally like, why would you want to know what that's like? Like, are you okay on it? So why do we want to know what it's like when you're not?
Totally.
So give it to me, Erin.
Oh, I was just going to say my pregnancy was not a difficult pregnancy. The postpartum period, the month after, was more difficult than any part of pregnancy. Like, and I wasn't quite ready for it. Like, I had help. Like, Josh has been great. We have a doula and she's been doing some postpartum doula stuff for us, which is like amazing. If you have a doula and she does postpartum doula work, she will come over to your house and like hold your baby so you can take a shower or like clean your kitchen or do your laundry or just like sit there and talk to you. It's just like very, very nice to have a postpartum doula. Endorse. But it was harder. The first month after giving birth was harder than all the 9 months up to that point. And part of it is just like, not only was I dealing with my own body, it's like I also have this baby to take care of. And babies are at their least charismatic when they are 4 weeks old and younger. They are just like complete. They are just like a ball of need, and they don't really give. You know, they're not given anything. They don't smile. They don't laugh. They're just, you just have to take care of them, and you feel like biologically drawn to taking care of them. I found that so much harder. Carol, was it your experience that you found postpartum to be more difficult than being pregnant?
My first pregnancy was very easy. My birth was a little bit, there were some complications, but it's funny because like, even though I always tell people, I'm like, my birth had so many complications and I literally told my OBGYN halfway, I go, we got to stop. We got to do this another time. And she was like, I can see the head. And I was like, okay. And so like I was in so much pain. I had a lot of like issues with my epidural and stuff. But then the second the baby came out, it was like they went, like I just forgot everything. Like the body does play weird ass mm-hmm. tricks on you. So you do forget it even though you're going through a lot of pain. And then the postpartum was tricky, but I went to work 5 weeks later just because I got an opportunity. And so it was like my mind was just kind of like, deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And but like with my second pregnancy was tough. So like just in terms of back pain and some other stuff. So I don't know. The postpartum, the birth for that was easier. So it's like, it feels like biology or Mother Nature, whatever you want to call it, it's giving you little breaks wherever it's taking things away. I don't know. But yeah, I didn't have horrible postpartum periods, but like I said, it's for everybody's, it's different. And
that's the thing, you have to like prepare for this entire range of things. Like it could be like, mm-hmm. you could have a horrible time. You could be fine. Like just with a birth, you could, like when I was in labor, it was the worst pain I've ever experienced. Then I got the epidural, could not feel anything. I pushed for 10 minutes and she was out. And like that, like the actual pushing part, super easy, could have been really hard. Like there's all these massive swings that can happen. And it's like the one thing that's, I guess, that's constant through everything is like you, have a baby at the other side of it. And like you and your body is dealing with the aftermath of that. I want to kind of end this conversation because I could talk about it for a long time. I want to talk about like ways that people who don't have kids, perhaps party aunts and uncles.
That's me.
Oh my God. I bet you are the most fun party aunt, Dr. Heather.
I actually really am. I buy only, I don't care. I own it because I buy like the most fun things for children, especially babies, like sunglasses, right? Like, is your mom gonna buy you sunglasses? No, but I will, or fedora. Like, come on. And then I'm like, take pictures, send them to me, preferably when I'm having a long shift, so I can laugh and then be like, I'm amazing at dressing babies. It's my thing to do.
That is like one awesome way that people who don't have children can support parents. Like, send them something that doesn't make music. Nothing. Don't send noisy gifts. Although we do have a lot of noisy gifts for Juniper because we're like, she's gonna like music, and it's just preparing for like 8 years of just noise. That's one thing that I, before I had kids, sometimes I felt like I didn't quite know what to do when like a friend of mine had a kid. Like, how do I better support you? Kara, like right after you gave birth to your babies, like what was the best way that your friends and family could support you?
Well, it's so appropriate that Miss Megan Gailey is on this podcast with me today, finally, after being star-crossed on Hysteria for so long. Megan was like a huge support to me when I had my first baby because my husband did have to go out of town when my baby was 2 weeks old. So he got like a work opportunity that he had to take. And so he left for 9 weeks when my baby was 2 weeks old. And so I was just kind of like, and then I went back to work at 5 weeks. So I did have some hired help, but just having friends that will just be like, what are you doing? I'm just going to come over and sit with you. Like, I'm like, you know, not like, hey, we're doing this. Come over, bring the baby. Like, it's really hard to bring the fucking baby. The baby needs to nap every hour. Like, you have to whip your boobs out all the time. Like, it's just not ideal. So it's really just nice. And obviously there's people that are like, no, get out of my space. I don't want anybody here for like 2 months or whatever. For me, I really just liked somebody coming and saying like, let me sit with you and we'll have a glass of wine while the baby's sleeping or whatever, you know, or while the baby's awake, I'll come hold the baby so you can take a shower. Exactly like what you're saying your postpartum doula is doing, you know, like stuff like that I just think is so nice. Or just even text messages. If you live far away from someone that has a baby, just like checking in. How's it going? How's the baby? Like, you know, it's just nice to have people feel like they didn't like just forget about you because you're holed up inside, like taking care of this other person, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's great. Megan, besides being Kara's child's dad, essentially, what are some other ways? It sounds like you've been pretty well versed and well rehearsed in like helping people after they've had kids. Like, what are some things that you've found really meant a lot to people?
I always send food gift certificates.
Mm. Like, oh, yeah, you sent us a food gift certificate.
Yeah, when the baby first comes, I'll send like a, you know, I know they're evil, but, you know, like a Postmates or if there's like a special restaurant they love. Because I guess even with Postmates, it's like you can get anything. You know, like you can go to 7-Eleven and get M&Ms and whatever you want. So I'll do that. And yeah, I mean, that was a major expense I just didn't even think about when I got pregnant, is because my first trimester was so bad and I'm the person in our house who does the shopping and the cooking because I like it, not because I've folded to the patriarchy. And so then it was like, well, I couldn't open the fridge without gagging. So it was like, okay, we have to order food every single night. And that's an expense that I hadn't even thought of. So I think in addition to like the baby needing stuff, there's also stuff that the parents need. Yeah. And I love when people have given me gifts now and there's like a baby thing in there and then there's something for me too, like a bath bomb or a lotion. Yeah. I think that's really thoughtful.
Our good friend Allison was like, you have enough baby gifts, and sent me like a robe and like under eye gel like things. And so it is nice to get a gift like when you're in the middle of opening like 1,000 gifts for baby. Something
yes
for you.
I'm like jealous of this unborn baby. It's like more sneakers than I do now. I'm like, enough, I want something.
Dr. Irabunda, how, besides like sending fedoras, which is very, very cute, what are some ways that people who don't have children can support new parents?
I totally agree with like stopping by if people are okay with it and checking in on people, because as fun auntie, I've definitely had to do that. And like people are in different phases of things. And what I noticed too, when I have people come to see me in the office, is that there is a level of loneliness that happens. And also you're trying to figure out, I guess, a new identity or like a morphed identity. I actually had this discussion with a few patients recently, and one of my best friends, because she has an 18-month-old, so COVID baby, hardcore. And she's like, she's like, I don't know if it's the COVID, like, you know, isolation, or if it's just the fact that I have an 18-month-old, but I feel like I've just been by myself and I don't know who I am anymore and things. Mm-hmm. And so I think just, you know, little ways of telling people that, hey, you're still a person. You're not just so-and-so's mom, like, is really meaningful to a lot of people. And asking people if there's anything they, you know, you can do for them, or like, you know, being weird and just like semi showing up. I do that unannounced with a fedora for the baby.
Oh my God. I want to get
Juniper.
Because
it's funny for us.
A fedora. Oh yeah. I want to get Juniper a fedora. Oh, dressing them in outfits is like one of the most fun things. Like during the first month where I was like sad and didn't want to see anybody and all that stuff, the outfit was like the highlight of my day, where I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna put her in tiny little jeans today. And like,
that's the thing. I'm obsessed
with pockets.
Yeah,
she's got stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like little purses. Like I've seen. Yeah.
Yes. I look every time I get something, I go, where is he going? What is he going to the LA Phil?
Sneakers is so funny because I like truly did not put a pair of shoes on my kid until she was like a year old, maybe.
Well, yeah.
Like, you're getting so many kicks.
I got a pair of Jordans for an infant looking at me right now. And it's like, is he going on a date? I'm sorry.
I'm like, those are the gifts I give. I think they're hilarious. And I'm like, please send me a picture. Like, you don't know. This like makes my day.
Oh man, that is giving me some ideas for gifts to give Megan Gailey's future son. No, Megan, I'll send you like the same awesome pajamas that I send all my friends, because they're pajamas are so important to look after. Okay, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I feel petty.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.
All right, we are back. We are almost at the end of the show. Alyssa Mastromonaco has rejoined the group. We're going to talk I Feel Petty, Megan, do you want to go first?
Yes. And I'm asking for recommendations in this too. So it's obviously Omicron time. I'm 6 months pregnant. I'm not doing a lot. So I've been watching movies, which I don't usually do. And I've gotten my screeners, everything's streaming. And I got to say, I have been underwhelmed by the films that everyone's like, this is so good. Licorice Pizza, I was bored out of my mind. I'm like, we're rooting for this 25-year-old woman to be with a 15-year-old. I got shit to do, but I actually don't have anything to do, you know? So then I'm just on my phone being upset at a movie. So Tick, Tick, Boom, I thought was good. I didn't think it was life-changing. I loved Belfast, but I think it's because I saw it in the theater and I used to live in Belfast and it's like, look at me. So I just feel like this season of films have been underwhelming, not great. I don't know if I should blame COVID or if there's men to blame. Happy to do that. So if you have movies that you've seen that you've been like, this is so great, please let me know, because I'm watching season 3 of Real Housewives of Miami, which came out 10 years ago.
Megan, I started watching Real Housewives.
Yes, I know. And I'm watching Yellow Jackets. I am watching Yellow Jackets.
Just started
Yeah, two episodes in. I'm definitely having to close my eyes at points for bones and stuff.
Don't eat while you're watching that show.
Okay, well, I'm eating constantly, so that is difficult. I did once eat a chicken pesto panini while watching It Follows. So, you know, I will power through.
Okay, okay. I mean, I guess the cannibalism kind of like ratchets it up a notch.
Yeah, you know, true.
It's more, it's like the can I eat while I watch it challenge.
Yeah.
Cannibalism is like the highest.
I'm not going to eat a kebab for sure.
All right. Well, you guys heard that. If you know of any good movies that came out this year, let Megan Gailey know because she's underwhelmed. All right. Here's the thing I'm feeling petty about this week. I'm feeling petty about diamonds. Diamonds. They are not a girl's best friend. I think that at best they are a girl's friend from high school that she sometimes checks in on Instagram and is like, oh, that stupid bitch. But here's why I'm thinking about diamonds this week. So this week, Bloomberg Opinion tweeted out a story that contained this phrase: diamonds grown in a lab don't conjure up quite the same emotions as natural diamonds do. The source on this piece of opinion story was De Beers, as in the diamond conglomerate. So it was basically like, look, diamonds have a hugely problematic history, especially mined diamonds. And lab-grown diamonds are actually an ethical way to get stones that don't have flaws in them without, like, exploiting people and raping the earth. But yeah, the fact that Bloomberg Opinion put that piece out that was like, turns out diamonds that are grown in a lab make ladies sad is just what I'm feeling petty about this week. If you are a publication, do not allow a diamond to write a story about how you should use mined diamonds in jewelry instead of farmed or grown diamonds. I find the whole thing so, like, ridiculous. Like, come on. Come on. Anyway, that's what I'm feeling petty about this week. Alyssa, do you want to go next?
Sure. Here's what I feel petty about. Obviously, it's after the holidays. I spend a lot of time watching cooking shows, as one does. But there weren't a lot of new Ina Garten episodes on, so I branched out to watch other people. And cooks, chefs, whoever you are, that make meatballs, play with meat or knead dough with jewelry on your fingers, that is disgusting. And either someone cleans your jewelry for you, which is also kind of just crap, like, or like, what are you, like, soaking your rings every time you're done making bread? I don't know. I've noticed it for years. It was out of control. Someone had these like long nails. These are short nails. They had long nails and they had jewelry on. And it's like, it's why you have a soap dish in the kitchen. You take your rings off, you put them down, you fucking make your dough, you roll your meatballs, you wash your hands, you use O'Keefe's working hands to get that sheen back, and then you put your jewelry back on. So anyway, I think the chef, if she were listening, would know who I'm talking to right now. But I'll keep it to myself. Just like if you're on television, fucking take your rings off, keep your nails short. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is so gross. I mean, jewelry on your hands in general, unless you're washing your hands a lot, can be kind of gross.
Yeah.
I guess if you think about it. I guess we're all germaphobes now, huh?
Kind of. But I just really felt it was egregious. Like there was no way that in her pave ring that like the dough wasn't stuck there for a good long time. Ugh. Thank you, Dr. Gross. Heather, for feeling that with me.
That was so disgusting.
Carol looks like she's frozen in the, like, grimace emoji face, you know, like where their mouth
is. Both of your I feel petties are why I don't have a diamond engagement ring. It's why I asked not to have one. But I guess I will – okay, so I tried to keep my I feel petty on the topic of child stuff. Also, it's the only thing that's really going on with me. But – okay, so I'm in a mom group on Facebook and, you know, there's lots there. But I will say there's a couple people in this mom group that are always sly bragging on their kids. And it's just like, just come out and brag. Like, don't write a post where you're like, is it weird that my two-year-old knows how to ride a bike already? Is that developmentally appropriate? Like, oh my God, call a doctor. Your kid knows how to ride a bike? Oh my gosh. Like, you're in this group truly asking if it's okay that your kid learned a skill early. Like, what? Like, just be like, I don't know. Hey guys, my kid knows how to ride a bike. Where do I get a good helmet? Like, what? I don't understand what you're trying to do. Like, just by acting like it's so weird and crazy to try to like garner a like compliments or something. I don't know, but it's I feel petty about it, and you guys got to stop.
Yeah, I've been like extra sensitive to that because every parent is like, my kid is actually exceptional, and it's like, well, maybe in a couple of things, but overall, yeah. It all kind of comes
out in
the
wash. My daughter talks so much. She's very, very verbal for her age. She cannot use a scooter. She cannot do many, many things physically. Like, so what, I mean, yeah, she's my child, you know? Like,
yeah, my daughter babbles constantly at a kind of young age for babbling, cries every tummy time.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
every tummy time. It's just like the world is ending. Yeah. No tummy time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's close with Dr. Yerebunda. What do you feel petty about?
I feel petty about being an essential worker right now in the age of Omicron, where maybe our healthcare system may be on the verge of collapse and pretty much most social things, right? Because, like, it's one of those things where it's like we knew this was probably going to happen, right? And we're not that prepared again. But really and truly, it's more so like I'm kind of jealous of all you people who get to work from home, and I can't see my GYN patients from home, unfortunately. You can't really do like pap smears from the house. I mean, you can, but it's creepy and it's weird, and so I'm not allowed to do it. And so it's like, yeah, I'm feeling kind of petty about having to go back out every day and see patients and do these things, because it's like I kind of want to like not have to wear real clothes.
I want to put on real clothes. I really would love to have to leave and do something that would be cool. I have like one pair of pants that I just like will wear 3 days in a row, and I'll just put them on my dresser when I'm done with them and then just like put them back on the next day.
There you go.
So maybe we can do like a Freaky Friday life switching type thing.
I know. I'm like, you can definitely come and hang out with the pregnant peeps and, you know, do some paps. I can teach you. I can train you. Ask some people some questions, catch some babies. I don't know how everyone else will feel about it, but I feel like those of us who are essential workers need a break. We need a break.
Yeah, it's
we
like
want to work from home, maybe just for a little bit.
It's like when you go see your OBGYN and they're like, hey, I have an intern with me today, or like a resident with me today. And you're just like, I have a podcaster here with me today. Is it okay if she can do that?
Can she just like do the whole thing?
She's observing. She's going to give you your pap.
Yeah, I'll be like actually Skyping in. So like, I'll be telling her what to do. I'm just at home. Like, it's fine.
I mean, whatever. All the meetings are going to take place in the metaverse in like 3 years, according to some guy who doesn't understand how technologically inept most Americans are. Yeah. Okay, guys, this was so fun. I am so happy to be back. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Thank you, Dr. Heather Yerebunda, for coming by.
Thank you,
Kara, for coming by. Thanks to Megan Gailey. And thanks to all of you, the listeners. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet. But these girls gotta fan it. Y2K email and scan it. Don't take no for an Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.
If you guys like Positive America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Positive America. That includes our new show, which is called Positive America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Positive America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.